I'm Matthew McCabe. Welcome to Miracle Voices. Each episode, we will be delving into stories of forgiveness, healing, and transformation that have come about from integrating the principles of the book, A Course in Miracles. If you want to learn more about A Course in Miracles, visit www.acim.org. If you'd like to visit the Miracle Voices site, please go to www.miraclevoices.org. If you feel inspired to make a love offering, please visit us at miraclevoices.org/donate. All donations go to support the work of the Foundation for Inner Peace, the publisher of A Course in Miracles. Now here's your program. Hello, everybody. This is Matthew McCabe. Welcome to another edition of Miracle Voices. I'm here with my co-host, Tam Morgan. Tam, how are you doing?
I'm trying to be. But I've been doing so. Oh, I turn that quack off. Hi, yes, I'm here. I'm glad to be here.
Is that like a raven we hear in the background? Do you have like an Edgar Allan Poe theme going on?
No, it's my phone that I forgot to turn off, and it's a duck quack.
Oh, okay, that's much more benign. Okay,
it's benign.
So we also have a guest today. Yes, I'd like to welcome our guest, Seema Kaneja, today. Well, okay. Seema, where are you joining us from today?
I'm actually in Rochester, New York.
Okay, oh, great.
Oh, nice. I love Rochester.
Yeah. Yeah, it's beautiful. This time of year is very pretty, very nice.
Yeah.
And Seema, let's just jump right in. How did A Course in Miracles come into your life?
Yeah, so as you know, I trained as a physician. So while I was in medical school, and even before I entered into medical school, I was very curious about other ways to heal. I was born in India and first generation immigrant parents. So trips to India and exposure to, you know, in the family, there were homeopaths. There, my grandfather, great-grandfather practiced herbal medicine. So all of that. So I was already kind of exposed to different ways to heal. So I was reading, and you know, there wasn't internet or anything at that time. So library books, reading workshops, and I came across Love is Letting Go of Fear, as you know, from Jerry Jampolsky. And that book was very amazing, and it kept referring to A Course in Miracles. So I was curious. So I remember one semester I had like stipend money that you got when you were in medical school, and I used it all to buy different books in the bookstore. And one of them was the Course in Miracles, and it was the three volume, you know how it was in three volumes then. So that's how it happened.
So that was kind of your on-ramp. Love has forgotten no one. Is that what you said?
Love is letting go of fear.
Oh, right. Love is letting go of fear.
Jerry Jampolsky. Yeah.
I used all the time. Yes, I still have that, and I leaf through that all the time. I love the little drawings in there and everything. It's like a children's book for adults in a way.
Right, right. Yeah. And when I went to the Course in Miracles, I was really very, like, something about the forgiveness lessons really, really spoke to me. So I would read them and I would look at it, but something also told me that if I really followed this path, that things would shift in my life. And I think I had this inner sense that I wasn't quite ready. So I kept the books, but I didn't dive deep into them until like probably about 10 years ago when I really felt more drawn. And it was the same books that I had, you know, all the places I had moved. I was in New York City at that time, and residency and medical school and training and fellowship, all the different places you could go. And, but those books, somehow they stayed with me.
Do you want to hear a little story about Love is Letting Go of Fear?
Sure.
Okay. It makes me laugh all the time because I was very, very close to Jerry. And I was writing my own book with my mother, Double Vision, way back when I was about 24. And I wrote in it some, it was like the best of my journals and my diaries. And so I wrote in certain things about Jerry that he came to me and he asked me not to put in the book. And they were personal things about him. And I was like, why? And he said, well, I don't want people to hear da-da-da-da about me. And I was like, Mr. Love is Letting Go of Fear is telling me not to write about what my experience as a child was with you? Well, not this way. And it was like, I was a little bemused, but also a little irate that he was coming to tell me what I could write or not in my book. And I did a meditation and I heard, what is this for? And I stopped and it's like, yeah, why? What purpose does it serve anyone for me to say that information? There's no purpose whatsoever. And I realized, you know, oh, this is love. And what I was writing about too was in loving gratitude for who he was in my life. So it shifted me. And so later when the book first, before it came out, my mother and I were sent the galleys and the picture on the front and everything. And we ended up doing a talk in Hawaii, at which Jerry was a participant and also in the audience for this particular talk between my mother and me. We're talking about the book. And I was telling the story. I was like, you know, some people were actually very fearful of what would be inside this book. And I can't even understand why. And I opened the book. And when they give you, as you know, as having written, your first look at the book, it's just the cover with a whole bunch of blank pages in the middle, you know, that they show. So I opened it for the audience to see all of these blank pages. And I looked straight at Jerry and I went, can you believe that some people would be fearful about this? And that's what I think of every time I think of love is letting go of fear. Wow. But it was a beautiful lesson for me as a writer. To know why, especially if you write about real situations or your perception of them. You
know, yes, definitely. Yeah, that's a beautiful lesson. Yeah.
Well, Seema,
you continue on your world.
Yes. Seema, you've got some incredible forgiveness stories, particularly around, you know, you being a doctor and then experiencing some symptoms yourself. Maybe you could share about that.
Yeah. So, so around the time, so let's see, this would have been, I want to say about 2008. Yeah. So I kind of timed things from how old my son was around that time. He was about 5 or 6. I started to develop this pain and, it was very embarrassing. It was in my tush. That's where it was. And, it started as like an infection, as an abscess. And then eventually it became something, it was called, diagnosed as a fistula. So it was chronic pain. It was very uncomfortable stooling. It would start in the beginning of the day and then just kind of, you know, a little bit, maybe a little bit of relief, but basically most of the day there was some level of pain. It was just a matter of how much. And it was enough that I was, for sometimes I would be incapacitated, that I just could only sit or lay down. So you can imagine at that time I was running my own practice. I had a pediatric practice, single mom, 5-year-old kid. It was a lot, right? I was busy. The body was being asked to do a lot. And so this pain was obviously very unwelcome. And just the whole nature of it and the discharge that came from it, all that stuff was just so, so uncomfortable. I didn't feel comfortable sharing about it. I felt very embarrassed because I was trying to heal, to do all the things that I knew how to do, which I was working with my medical doctors, but also homeopathic physicians. I was working with like a mind-body, you know, someone skilled with mind-body medicine as therapist. I was practicing affirmations. I wasn't really a student of the course yet, but I was trying a lot of different healing tools, herbal medicine, yoga postures. I mean, you name it, I did it, visualizations, chanting, prayers. And I really wasn't getting relief. That's what was happening. So that was a big wake-up call. And so it was really this message of physician, heal thyself, which we were referencing Jerry Jampolsky. That's one of the messages, from what I understand, he heard when he first picked up the Course in Miracles, this theme of physician, heal thyself. And so I had to take a real look at my, you know, my life and where it was and where it was going, and a lot of questions, more questions than I could find answers. And it was really challenging doing that in the context of that physical pain as well. So that's kind of how the journey started for me.
Okay. I know, I think once when we talked before, you mentioned Louise Hay, and she always has or had these maps of like what an area of the body relates to in our mind. Did you look at that and find any discoveries and make you think about it in a different way or anything like that?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Louise Hay. I was looking at the beliefs and what are the beliefs that are reflected, as you said, by a certain body, a body part, certain symptom, and then what beliefs to learn. And I practiced it, but honestly, I'd have to say, I really didn't find lasting relief. Like they were helpful. And I love her book. And I really, you know, it's one of my books in my bookshelf, but there was something else that I think was missing. So basically what I did is, like I said, I did all of that, right? That was my whole repertoire. And I tried to get the help I needed, right, to support myself as best as I could. And then I ended up saying yes to like a surgical procedure. And in my mind, having to say yes to that was like a failure. Like I felt I had failed. And that was the other thing. There was so much self-judgment that I had around myself. Like it was double judgment, you know, like sometimes people might feel that anyway about a body symptom, but I had this sense of, well, I'm a physician and I should know better. Like I should be able to do this. And then I have all this training, X, Y, Z. And even in forgiveness, like I was trying to do forgiveness, but as I said, I really hadn't worked with the course yet so deeply. So my forgiveness was, it was actually just uprooting more grievances that didn't get healed, you know? So it's like, you're trying to declutter a room and you just throw things around in different places, but in the end you have the same room with the same clutter. So that's kind of, I think that's kind of, I think where my mind was, but, I did end up like, so this, you know, took like 6-7 months. And then I finally said, okay, I'm going to go for this procedure, which was such a minor procedure. In retrospect, I'm not sure why I, you know, resisted it, but that was where I was. And the procedure sort of worked, but it was difficult. Like the IV didn't go right. I had reactions to the pain medicine. And again, now I see it was all a reflection of the unforgiveness in my mind. It was all the unforgiveness. And it just was being reflected back to me. But the procedure did help me somewhat, that the pain wasn't like all the time. And it gave me, you know, a bit of respite so I could continue to do more digging inside, as well as working with like another homeopath. And also one of the things that did, this is the thing I was reflecting, that like I judge this as a failure, right? And the course says you really can't judge your advances from your retreats. You really don't know. So what was happening was a deep unwinding. And I was realizing that I was doing pediatric medicine and I was being of service to the children and, you know, the families that I was serving, but my heart wasn't happy. Like I wasn't joyful here. And I was really wanting to do more of holistic forms where I had more time, where it was less regimented, where I could really go into the mind. And so that's what I did. I let go of that pediatric practice. I, you know, just referred patients elsewhere. They were very sad to see me go, but I could just tell that it was time. And with my parents' help and support, I set up like a holistic practice. So that's what came out of that. And then I spent the next, you know, 4 or 5 years really going deep into mind-body medicine, deeper into homeopathy, yoga, and just acting as a consultant. So I wasn't doing the traditional pediatric care. And I was now working with adults as well, doing a lot of workshops and also able to be there for myself and my son. And around that time is when the course came in. So the course starts to come in. And so again, another unwinding. So I guess what I wanted to say is what I thought was, it was like, oh, this is bad. This pain is bad. I can't heal it. This is bad. The surgery, this is bad. Everything was judgment. It really served the purpose to let go of something that wasn't serving. Let go. And the pain, the pain was the catalyst. I don't think I would have unless the pain was there. So in the end, I could even bless that experience and say, okay, this too was in order. But you know, that took, like I couldn't say it then, right? Hindsight is 20/20. So yeah. And I can go deeper, you know, into what the course did, but I just wanted to put that in there. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I mean, it speaks on so many different levels. Is what you had the same as a fissure?
A fissure is like a minor. This was like more, you know, an abscess and a fistula where there's a part that just couldn't heal. It just kept filling up and draining and filling up and draining. And it just wasn't, it wasn't going anywhere. And so a surgery was needed to correct it.
Well, first of all, you just gave me a healing opportunity because I have a friend who is a doctor and he's kind of, he can complain a lot. And there's a million things he can't do because he had what you have. And, you know, it can become with a bunch of like high school friends, of which he's with, you know, a bad joke. Oh, I can't go because I can't sit. I can't, you know, and it like talk about being the butt of jokes.
Yeah.
Like, that's where it becomes in a playful way. But I think truly what you're talking about is so common, where on a spiritual, in quotes, path, we think that because we have a headache, especially if people hear the course in a certain way, we shouldn't, and we're a failure. And we do live in this world of form as well. And we are doing this practice. And the biggest trick, which is what I think you got out of this, is that it's not a failure. It's a process. If it's not your body, you're taking care of other bodies. And if you're seeing other bodies as sick, that's just as equally, you know, participating in the world of this illusion. And I remember, you know, at the end, my mother always called medicine magic. And on her last day on this planet, and that woman was as awake as I've ever seen anyone as far as conscious behavior. She was like, give me magic, give me magic. And I gave her morphine, you know, it's like, I need the magic. And she kept saying, ignore what my body's doing. Ignore the screaming of my body. I've never been so peaceful in my life. Now, morphine could have helped that piece, but it was so much deeper what she was saying. So when we think of that as, you know, as a failure, I can only cite a story that someone who was deep, deep, deep into meditation, a meditation called Siddha Yoga meditation. And she had insomnia, and she developed insomnia, and she was getting worse and worse and worse. And all of her support groups in meditation said, you have to meditate more. You're not getting it. You're not getting it. You're not getting it. And she was going out of her mind. And by the time she called me, she was just in hysterics. And I said, take a sleeping pill. No, that's a fail. That I'm not doing it right. Take a sleeping pill. Your body has gone into a rut and into a pattern. It needs the sleeping pill. Then you can do your work again. And that misconception, and she did. She took, you know, a couple weeks of sleeping pills, and then she was okay.
Yeah.
And there is a dance that we do need to do in this world of form, of what we invest in magic and how it can help us. Surgery, yay. Thank God there's surgery. But that doesn't mean we're not doing our practice, because as you said, the practice was letting go of the judgment of it. And if we learn to let things be as they are, and get to the underlying message of how do we partner and have compassion for our bodies that have taken so many hits for us. But I find it really interesting that you said that the course came in around things you were doing with your son and pediatrics. And any place on the body, that's the place where kids first learn to make fun of and also to deal with is their rear end. And, you know, my ex-husband's last name was Bottom, which I wouldn't take on because I knew that my son would be made fun of immediately with that last name. And there's so much kind of primal shame around anything in that area. And what is it? And my favorite thing that you said here was you just said, in the end, I bless that experience. And you're talking about your end, your bottom, you know, your end. And so that's just a perfect way of summing that up for yourself, because that, as you said, is a fabulous learning. And it's so helpful to people to know that even as a doctor and you're doing this practice, forgiveness in every moment of yourself for whatever's going on with your body is so important.
Yes.
Easier said than done, but yes.
Totally, totally. And I feel like the process, as you said, it is a process. And so so now I'm in this place where the pain is there, but not all the time. I'm able to somewhat manage it. And then I'm doing this, you know, holistic practice, and the course comes in, and again, things seem to shift. The practice seems to dwindle. Friends that were there don't seem to be there anymore. And it's like another unwinding. And then the pain comes back again. And at that time, I was doing this medical work where I was working with others that had chronic pain as well. So another opportunity, another forgiveness. And this time, I think I was more equipped because I had a more grounding in the course. I had people that I was, you know, studying the course with. I was doing the mystical mind training, David Hoffmeister online. So I had mentors, and one of my mentors even said to me, you know, you might want to do whatever it is you need to do on the physical so that you can give yourself the opportunity to receive whatever the lesson is. And that was so helpful because right away the judgment was gone from that. So then I just applied myself and I let myself rest. I let myself do homeopathy, let myself do Tylenol, let myself do Advil, you know, really whatever was necessary. And sometimes I have clients and, you know, they talk to me about pain and maybe they're course students and they'll say, well, I know the body's not real, or I know this is just temporary, or I know. And I share with them my experience and I say, you know, in all my experience that I had like several years of this pain coming and going. I said, I never heard guidance that told me ignore, or this is not real, or why are you complaining, or why. I said, it was more very like, you know, I would listen and it would be like, go watch this movie, or, you know, go take a nap, or, you know, some Advil would be helpful here, or talk to this person or whatever. Like it would be very, very practical. And it would just be a flow, like a call would come and someone would be like, oh, we're going to go out. And I would watch my mind and I would watch for this process. One of the other things that really spoke to me when I came to the course was just the idea of miracles, right? A course in miracles. And what is a miracle? And why can't I receive a miracle? And I realized this thing about the purification. So probably some years ago, when there would have been a lot of judgment, just the idea of purification would have been heard like, well, something is wrong then. And then, you know, the heart and the mind would close. But now I was curious. I was like, okay, miracles and purification. And, you know, I'm going deeper and deeper with these lessons, and I'm seeing so much healing on so many other levels. So what does it mean? What is this process of purification? Like, how does this all work? And so for me, using this tool with that David Hoffmeister has shared, levels of mind, and really going to the deeper belief, like what's inside here. So it's like the pain is the tip of the iceberg and what's underneath it. Yeah. And people, like, if you know anything about chronic pain, I mean, it's very, very amazing because people can have certain tests or imaging that show XYZ. There's the levels of mind diagram. Yeah. So people can have symptoms and then have imaging, and their symptoms may have nothing to do. Like the imaging should show like very, let's say, bad arthritis, for example, but they're more functional, or vice versa, that there's very little, but their pain is, you know, through the roof. So we know that we call it, like in medicine, pain is very subjective. It's a subjective experience. So we have pain scales as a way to communicate, right? Because I don't know what your pain is. So it was a great place for a deeper exploration of how can I hold space for myself and just uncover what's underneath. And so there was a lot underneath. There were ideas about sacrifice and guilt and punishment and how I deserved this and unworthiness. So it was like the deeper I went, the more it was. But this time with Mighty Companions and the course guiding me and just having that previous experience, I came to the space where I was very, very clear that if this was all physical, then it would have been healed by now because there wasn't anything I didn't do in my mind. So I was very clear that no, this is something deeper and I just need to be present. I need to be patient. I need to give myself time and I don't need to be alone also, that I don't have to isolate. And I had to watch myself for that aspect also. And that was the idea of minds, healing is the effect of minds that join while separation produces illness. I'm quoting that from the course, I'm paraphrasing, but this idea of joining and the idea of separation. So sometimes when there's pain, there can be a place where you just don't want to be around anyone. You know, you feel cranky, you feel irritable, whatever. And that has a place. You have to honor it. But sometimes there's like a deeper thing where you see, this is the thing. We don't know we're doing this. I mean, so that's why you have to, you know, have that space of a lot of compassion. It's almost like I kind of want to be in my, you know, silo. I want to be in this isolation. And the ego, it breeds, right? The ego breeds here. So kind of just gently looking at that and saying, huh, maybe I could rest and then meet with this friend later so I can take care of myself. But hey, it would be good to join and connect. And so I kind of just did these really, you know, very simple things, baby steps. And I found that I could feel like shifts, little shifts, little shifts, little shifts. And then when the final thing came, I still hadn't had this second procedure that I needed, but I had put it on the book. So I was going to go for it. So I wasn't resisting it. And then I just had this, you know, like a, and this is the other thing I'd like to say, we talk about a holy instant, but I guess my healing was a series of many, many, many holy instants and many, many, many holy encounters, undoing, undoing, undoing a little bit of whatever was holding on to this pain. And I think the final undoing was when I remember getting up in the morning and just resting and seating myself down and just really feeling like something was going to come through and I didn't know what it was. And I just felt this huge sense of love. And I felt such a love for myself and the experience in the body, the experience in the past, all of it, the doctors, the surgeons, the surgery that sort of didn't go well, this procedure, that, all of it, the medicines, the homeopaths, like there was just such a sense of love and acceptance and a wave of compassion. And I realized all this was a call for love all along. That's all it was. I didn't have to do anything. I just wanted to be in this space of love. And basically within a few weeks of that, the pain disappeared. Like it never came back again. Mm. And yeah. So I think, you know, my prompt to kind of share this journey and write the book was I had to really like dig deep, you know, in the course. And I you know, thankfully my medical school training, it gives you that, right? You just have that capacity to dig deep and, you know, go deeper and read and all that. But I said, you know, this will be tough. Like if someone's facing this, like, wouldn't it be wonderful if I could put together something that they could read and, you know, just take heart and have courage and be supported and release themselves from judgment that, oh, I'm not healed in an instant, or I'm not healed with this encounter, something's wrong. So that was really my desire, because my experience really, like I said, it spanned in so-called time, right? And even then, nothing was wrong. It was working out exactly the way it needed to.
Mm. Now, I know Matt will put this up, but could you just tell us yourself the name of your book?
Yeah, it's Physician, Heal Thyself, A Doctor's Journey from Medicine to Miracles.
Hmm.
Yeah. And you referenced David Hoffmeister's levels of mind. And yes, that is essentially a diagram with concentric circles. And in that, in the center of it is, it's kind of, how would you describe it? That's how your mind creates in duality. Is that where you have desire at the center, belief, yeah, then thoughts, then emotions, perceptions, and then your body?
Yeah. So I want to share about this, thinking about someone who might be feeling some body symptom. Maybe they're in the midst of something. Because I think like some things with the New Age stuff, like it's helpful and sometimes it's not helpful because we feel like we're bad. We did this to ourselves and then we're guilty, you know? And so that's where like, it's just not helpful. So for me, the levels of mind says, let's just put the body aside for a minute. The body is part of the perceptual world. That's the outermost ring. It's the perceptual world, just like the war in Ukraine, just like anything happening, you know, is in the perception in the realm. So the whole cosmos is in the realm of perception. And let's just allow it. Like, Tam, you were saying, let everything be as it is, right? Let all things be as exactly as they are. So let's just let that be. Let's go within. And what are you feeling about these experiences? What are your emotions? You know, are you sad? Are you angry? Are you frustrated? Just anything and everything. What are you feeling? Just again, with, you know, just in a space of gentle, non-judgmental self-inquiry in that space. And that really is the beginning of the miracle. You know, that really is it. And then underneath it, what are your thoughts? Like what's cognition? Because sometimes we have these philosophies that say, well, if you just help yourself feel better, right? Just a smiley face will do everything. Sometimes, yes. Sometimes that's all you need. But sometimes, no. Because there is, like I said, it's the tip of the iceberg. There's more. So then the thoughts, the story. Like, what is the story that you're telling yourself? Just let's just speak it. Let's express it. And then we go deeper, the beliefs. So we share, like, right, there's either the ego belief system or the spirit's belief system. So that is where, and usually when we're doing this diagram, sometimes we can access the perceptual world, right? Because we're seeing it, we're touching, feeling our sensations. Maybe we're in touch with our emotions, sometimes we're not. We probably can speak our story, but then the beliefs, like something will happen, they're hidden. And it's almost like the ego is like, oh, you're getting too close here. You know, you're going to topple my card of decks, right? Which is going to topple anyway, but you're going to topple it sooner. So the beliefs, like, I believe I am guilty. I believe I am unworthy. I believe all I am is this body. I believe I'm alone. I believe I have to sacrifice, and I can go on and on, right? So uncovering the beliefs and then the desire, right? So what is my desire? So the Course even teaches us, right, that do not ask for healing of the body, but ask for healing of your perception of the body. And that can take us like so long just to, I mean, for me, just like, what does that really mean? Okay, what do you mean don't ask for healing of the body? That's what prayer is about. That's what, you know, people ask us that, right? Pray for me, pray for that. But it's so amazing because just this last week, actually, I had this experience of pain in my upper back. And I realized that there is a physical experience and then there's the whole perceptual overlay. There's a whole, it's like, again, that tip of the iceberg and what's underneath. So when we ask for a shift of perception, we're really asking a shift of all of it. And so that's our desire. So my desire is, please help me see this as you would have me see it, Spirit. Please help me see this through the eyes of love. Please help me see this so I feel comforted. And so you see, those prayers, that desire doesn't even have to get to the body. Like, we don't have to talk about a body healing or not healing, because I find that's really helpful, because if we make the body healing an outcome, like it needs to look a certain way or it has to do a certain thing or a certain number, you know, then we're like divided. Because there is an outcome in form, but then we're caught in the ego mind because the ego mind is the author of the form. And then we're in the split mind. And so then we suffer. And then again, we've talked about this already earlier, there's going to be all this judgment that we lay on ourselves. So the desire is getting us to the prayer, the altar. And as simple as, I want to align myself to the belief system of the spirit with this. Like, I don't even know what that is, but I don't want this. I don't want to know myself as like, you know, I'm deprived or I have to sacrifice or I'm just unworthy and nothing will ever work out for me or I'm guilty or any of that. Even that, like, just can be so powerful because the rest is there. It's not like we need to create reality, or we need to create relationships, or we need to create a world. I feel like it's more undoing the overlay we have on top of that, which organically wants to come through. And then for me, the effect of the healing of the body was an effect of that inner cleaning, that inner, and I kind of talk about the levels of mind. I say it's like a forgiveness wheel. It's really a wheel to work through the mind to forgiveness, through the center to the desire, without missing anything, without like suppressing emotions or pretending you don't have feelings, or you're bad to have feelings, or your beliefs or your thoughts or your perception. I feel like it systematically helps you like not miss anything, not do a spiritual bypass, not try to deny, you know, this isn't real. And then every time you feel like a little lighter, a little relief. So I did that like countless times, you know, again and again and again.
I think it's just incredible how deep you've gone with this. And I love that. One of the things I want to add to is when I said, you know, get to that state where you let things be as they are, people can get very confused, because that means, oh, you should let a rapist go ahead and keep raping. You know, it's not that. And it's really important, especially for activists, to know that I'm not saying, or the course, not me, but it's not saying that you don't take action when action is appropriate in this world of form. It's you ask yourself first, you ask your higher self, is this what I need to do, rather than just reacting. And it's, you know, you stop, you think, you feel, you go in and you ask, and it's, yes, this is part of my path. Even like in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, when a war had to happen, and it's, so you do take action, but you also let it be at the same time. And it sounds, you know, very ironic, and it is. But as you expressed it so beautifully, sometimes you can have your smiley face, and other times you really need to go deeper, and that's what you trust.
Yes. Thanks for saying that. Totally. That's where, like someone would say, I've got the symptom. I mean, let's take it like the activist is a great example too. And I want to kind of maybe comment on that, but let's say someone just has some symptoms, and they're dealing with symptoms, and they have the course. The course isn't saying, don't go to a doctor, don't go to a therapist, don't take medicine. It doesn't say, nowhere does it say it, but everyone's path is laid out for them. And when we can still our mind and we can use, you know, different tools, this is one tool, there's many out there that help us go within and do that inner process of self-inquiry. I believe that's the purification. That's the recentering. And remembering, like, this is my true identity. You know, I am as God created me, all of that. Then the actions, as you said, come out like they're inspired. And you don't know what blessing you're going to offer. Like, you think you're the person in need, but you showing up will be a blessing to the others also. So that's where, you know, it just gets really amazing, just the synchronicities. And then there's a lightness to it. It doesn't feel so overwhelming, like, oh, I've got this thing and I've got to do it and I've got to heal it, right? All that stuff that I can fade. So yeah, for 100%, there's guided, inspired action. And I think, you know, with activism, I think it's very interesting, because we constantly think something is out there. And even that, right? So the minute, like they say, you can't step into a river, the same river twice, like things are flowing, things are shifting. The minute the observer and the observed, right, they enter in, something shifts. So wouldn't it be wonderful if we had these ways of, how can I show up with all of the love and light that could be present in this moment? Like, what would that look like? And then maybe, I mean, you're talking about the Bhagavad Gita, and that's perfect, because my parents and I have been rewatching this Mahabharata serial from which the Bhagavad Gita emerged. And you see all the steps it took to get to that, the war. Like from the beginning, there were the seeds were there. But the point is that we can use this to be empowered so that we're not constantly feeling the sense of having to fix, because I know activists burn out as well.
Yep.
From that. So that's a real thing, as do caregivers, as do doctors, you know, it's not just them, because I think there's this, this responsibility and, you know, again, a judgment of outcomes. And I believe the Course in Miracles gives us, this beautiful vista of forgiveness where we can behold everything with gentleness. And then from there, you know, the actions just seem to be given. They, you know, they emerge. So I'm very grateful to have this as, you know, as a path that really just empowers us and, you know, gives us peace of mind, which of course that's the goal.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Thank you.
Yeah, and for people that want to go deeper into your story, Seema, it is on your books on Amazon, Physician Heal Thyself, A Doctor's Journey from Medicine to Miracles by Seema Kaneja. And I said it right that time. Thank God.
Yes.
It's a miracle. Sorry about that. So wonderful. And you've got all 5-star reviews. So well done. You know, you mentioned guilt quite a bit in your story. And I think it's guilt, something common to everybody's story in greater or lesser degree. Is that when guilt comes up now, and I guess worthiness is kind of related to that too, what's your go-to to kind of recenter yourself and let go of that?
Yeah, thank you. And I think in our communication, email communication, you had used the word ego storm. And I thought, how perfect that's the word you use. Cause that's what I use myself. Because first of all, the fact that we call it an ego storm helps us to see, well, it's coming from the ego mind, right? So that helps us with the source. And then it's a storm. That storms do pass, right? They can be pretty devastating and intense, but they do pass. So I feel like just calling it that is so helpful, because that just grounds us in, okay, this is what we're dealing with. And then I feel, the guilt is going to be a part of it. And it's like guilt, fear, punishment, right? They're like, they kind of travel together. So for me, I feel like it's such a process of really recognizing that that's happening, right? That I'm off, you know, and sometimes we don't give ourselves that permission. Like we just feel like, I know for me, I'm in the situation now with elder parents who are needing caregiving and coordinating that and all of it. So I know I can go. Like I have that capacity from all the years of being in medicine and all that. But it's not something that is like, you know, that's using the body for pride. You know, I don't want to go there. So just acknowledging, hey, I'm off, something is not quite right. And then stopping and pausing, taking a breath and asking like, what do I need in this moment? Like what would be helpful? And it's so surprising to me. Sometimes it's like, I need a nap, you know, I just need rest, or I need to go out and walk. The body needs to move, or I need to connect with a friend. I need to go for a massage. You know, whatever self-care. And then even remembering the course lesson, what was the lesson for today? And it's amazing how you'll forget it, you know, that the ego, like the Maya, right, descends and just is forgetfulness, but with compassion, acknowledging it. And then really for me, that desire, we talked about this, that the concentric circles and levels of mind, the desire. Like, do I want to know myself as guilty? Do I want to give credence to the guilt? Do I want to collect evidence for guilt, whether it be for myself or someone else? Or do I want to know my innocence? Do I want to know myself as love? So even that prayer, like so many times, like I think it bypasses everything and reaches to the core and says, no, this is what I want. This is my desire. And it's that willingness, right? I'm willing, and saying something like, I see this guilt, or I feel guilty, or whatever it seems to be that's, you know, creating these feelings of guilt. But wow, I would love to know myself differently. I would love to know myself in this moment as innocent. I would so love to know myself as love. And Spirit, please convince me of this. So it's like giving it to Spirit then, because it's not our job to then convince ourselves. It's because if I feel like if I do that, then it's like I'm still in the ego mind, and that's what got me into this, you know, pickle. So it's like, really feeling like I need an intervention and letting, you know, I need a miracle, right? I really need a miracle, and letting the spirit orchestrate that. So those are some of the things that I do.
Yeah. And, you know, when I think about that levels of mind diagram, and I'll include it in the show notes. And when it can be complicated if it's your first time looking at it. So I just always just try to remember, what do I want here? Do I want healing? Do I want joy? Or if, am I turning on a cable news channel and I want to rage? It's like, I just have to be honest with myself. I want the rage right now, because yeah. I can see the problem outside myself. And then when I've calmed down and the ego storm's passed, maybe I can want joy or healing again. That's why I always end the podcast with the, you know, when you want only love, you'll see nothing else. Cause it's like, what do I want? Because everything starts from there.
Yeah. But I think it's beautiful what you said though, because as we've been saying, there are stages and process. So sometimes when I'm in that storm, for me, like watching a movie is really helpful. And there's a resource I use. It's Movie Watcher's Guide to Enlightenment. It's also through David Hoffmeister. And you can go there and look at whatever the theme it is that's coming up for you, like rage, anger, whatever it is, and unworthiness. And what are the movies that tend to look, you know, highlight that? And so sometimes watching something like that, and watching whether it's something you just flip on and you get, because once you ask, right, the spirit's going to provide. Or like a movie that you curate and you look at, will mirror to you what's going on. But it's like enough that you can sort of go through it and then come out of it. Because I do feel that we can't avoid intense emotions on this journey. We can't avoid uncomfortable states of being, whether they be physical or emotional. It's more like, what purpose will they serve, right? What purpose? And like you said, right now, if the rage is coming back and then someone gives you like something that's, you know, Hallmark movie, it's not going to work, right? Because right. The energy is, they're totally different. And in fact, that might produce more rage. Like, what are you trying to do? Trying to cheer me up? Like, I'm not ready to be cheered up. Yeah. So I feel like definitely watching something that allows you to process through it in a way that you're going to do it like little kids. As a pediatrician, when they're upset, they're upset. I mean, they are full on upset, but then they're done. It's over, right? And I think as adults, we just learn all these tools sometimes, you know, to kind of suppress and hide. And we know that's kind of where the ego, you know, loves to hide. So I totally agree with you that we have to process it until we can say, okay, now I'm done, right? I'm done. I'm ready. So yeah, for sure.
That's great. Well, we have a tradition, Seema, and we're not going to let you get off the podcast until you answer. What is your favorite comfort food?
Oh, that chocolate. I don't even have to think. Chocolate, yes.
No hesitation there.
No hesitation.
Just by itself, huh?
No, I'm
dark good milk.
Dark milk. You know, whatever is available.
Okay, are you completely against white chocolate being called chocolate?
No, I'm not against it, but I'll have to say that's not usually what I have on stock, though. It's usually chocolate. Uh-huh. Yeah, I think chocolate, and then obviously comfort food like Indian traditional Indian food. That's my comfort food also.
Yeah,
home cooked Indian food.
I love kheer. You know, like just
yes.
That, like, pudding. Rice pudding. God, that's such comfort food for me.
Mango lassis are really good too.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I love mango lassi. Yes. Yeah. I love it. Yes.
They're comforting for me, except for the lactose.
Yeah. You could probably get a lactose-free one, I imagine.
At this point in California, yes, I imagine.
Yeah.
I'm sure you could. Yeah.
Well, I have them anyway.
Indian food is actually all pretty comforting.
I was going to say that. Yeah.
No, excuse me. I'm sorry. I lived in Nepal for a long time and traveled through India. It can actually be tremendously discomforting afterwards. Tremendously. Like,
you got sick in India, I take it.
Oh, like over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's because I would eat the street food. I loved Indian food so much that, you know, I wouldn't pay attention to where I got it or what my actual sensitive stomach, you know, did.
Yes.
My mind was much more adventuresome than my stomach actually can
be. Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah,
fantastic food.
Well, I think I'm going to go carbo load on some naan right now.
I was going to say that, right?
Naan with chocolate is really good, by the way.
We have an Indian shop here, and that's our, like, usually on Friday nights we order from them, and it's great mango lassi and naan and the different vegetables and stuff. So yeah, I'm right there with you, Matt.
Yum. And my favorite that I can never ever eat is the achar. You know,
the achar. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I love that so much, but I can't digest it at all. But boy, do I love, my mouth loves it.
Yeah, here we are like milder. We don't have, I mean, we have like the spices, but not the cayenne pepper hot spice.
Right.
So it's kind of modified. But yeah, we've got bottles of achar that we haven't opened in years, you know. So yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Well, Seema, thanks so much for coming on Miracle Voices and sharing your miracle voice. What a great story you have. And you really went deep there, connecting a lot of the dots of the kind of quantum and metaphysics, everything, and then, but still made it simple somehow. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for this opportunity. I'm just so, so grateful that we're together on this path, and, you know, this community is here for us. So thank you.
Same.
Is there any websites or anything you want to give out? I'll link to your book, but if there's any other way you'd like to be contacted, please go ahead.
Yeah, sure. And also the book is also on Audible, because I know some people like to listen. Yes. So it's on Audible. And coachingforinnerpeace.com is my website. And there's a link that they can contact me as well.
Great.
Beautiful.
Well, thanks again, Seema. Really appreciate it. And good luck to you the rest of the year.
Thank you.
Rest of everything.
Yeah, not just this year, beyond.
Thank you so much for doing this. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening today. Please subscribe to Miracle Voices by hitting the subscribe button on your podcast app. If you are enjoying these conversations, please consider leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use. And lastly, please visit us at miraclevoices.org and join our newsletter so we can stay connected. Until the next podcast, I want to leave you with my favorite course quote: "When you want only love, you will see nothing else."